Echo from the ages.
We may perhaps learn to deprive large masses of their gravity and give them absolute levity for the sake of easy transport.
That was a statement by Ben Franklin, written in the 18th century.
This is Face to the Future, a new transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command. Its conductor is Del Vina, well-known broadcaster, author, lecturer, a lady of adventure as well. It's Face to the Future, and here is our hostess, Del Vina.
Welcome again to Face to the Future. Everything you've done today, from stepping on the bathroom scales to lifting your hands, has been influenced by an ever-present phenomena called gravity. While it was in the 17th century that Sir Isaac Newton, after being hit on the head with a falling apple, put down on paper his famous law of gravitation, he was only stating something which for years had dogged men who dreamed of escaping the Earth's surface. In his famous book, Principia, in 1686, Newton went further and had a drawing made showing a cannon firing a cannonball from the top of the mountain. Each time, the cannonball was fired further out until at last it no longer fell to the ground, but around the earth in a continuing falling action. He had concluded this from the severely disciplined course of the planets around the sun and the moon about the earth. He put his finger on the principle of orbiting a satellite that long ago. He had only to wait for man to produce the power. To talk a little about gravity and its meaning today, our first guest is K.J. Bossert of Convere in San Diego, California. Mr. Bossert, what are some of the problems facing mankind which call for the outwitting of gravity?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question this way, because this gives me a chance to put across a point that is not often understood by people. You see, actually, there is two ways of, as you put it, outwitting gravity. Thousands of years ago, men outwitted gravity whenever they threw a rock. For that matter, whenever a monkey threw a coconut, he outwitted gravity. The other way is to oppose the force of gravity by an equal and opposite force, such as, for instance, when you fly an airplane. You oppose the weight of the airplane, the gravitational force, you oppose it by a lifting force.
So have we run completely away from the man-throwing-a-rock principle?
It is a strange thing that in the space age, when we go into space, we go back to the old, primitive way of overcoming gravity, like the man throwing a rock. We overcome gravity by energy, by, if you want to be technical, we call it kinetic energy, the energy that goes with speed, with velocity.
What are some of the problems, then?
Well, first of all, we'd like to perfect the ways we're using now. Our rockets can be made more efficient, for instance, by using better fuels. The Centaur missile, for instance, uses liquid hydrogen for fuel, which is a great step forward in the fight against gravity. We are able, with our present means, to our present techniques, to create speeds that are sufficient to overcome the gravity of the Earth. All it takes is some 7 miles per second velocity.
There is another aspect of gravity which I endured myself, the condition known as zero gravity, or weightlessness. While we accept such things as air pressure of 14 pounds per square inch and the gravity of our own weight, it's a strange feeling when one or the other departs us. Once in a pressure chamber, when I was taken to an altitude of about 55,000 feet, only a tight girdle kept me from swelling a few times normal size. Once in a state of weightlessness, I free-floated for 21 seconds. This is an odd, disoriented state indeed. If man is to go into space, lack of gravity is one of the factors he must live with. My next guest is Dr. Hubertus Strughol of the Aerospace Medical Center, near San Antonio, Texas. Dr. Strughol, will man's mental outlook change in these circumstances?
This is very difficult to say. I do not think that in such short trips around the Earth, as it is intended in the Mercury project, that this will have some effect on his mental attitude and so on. But I think in some longer space operations, which take perhaps several months, he might develop a kind of extraterrestrial cosmic attitude.
Will he feel exhilarated or depressed by this new combination of factors?
He might, in the beginning, be exhilarated by this visual panorama which he sees and experiences. He might, after some time, become indifferent, but it is difficult to make any statement with regard to, let's say, depression or something like this.
Let's say we're going to cross the continent one day in a rocket airliner. How long would the feeling of no gravity or weightlessness persist in a trip from New York to Los Angeles?
Probably around 20 minutes. And then this vehicle would glide down and would gain weight again very slowly until it has the passengers have their normal weight, let's say some 50 miles before the landing place.
It seems to me that at some point there would be a feeling somewhat like the start down in a fast elevator. How long would this sensation continue?
This is a very interesting question. You read sometimes in the astronautical literature that coasting, let's say around the Earth, is a constant falling, permanent falling around the Earth. And this might produce a kind of nightmare.
It sounds kind of nightmarish to me, too.
There is a difference between physical falling and the physiological reactions. It is true in the physical sense, it is a constant falling around the Earth in an orbit. But physiologically, probably an astronaut has only in the first 10 seconds or so the feeling of falling. And then they come into a new state of equilibrium. And I do not think that the astronauts have constantly the feeling of falling.
Gravity, however, is a many-sided, many-directional phenomenon. It's the various attractions of solar and celestial bodies, one for the other, or several of them for one, which keeps the universe in its multitude of constant relationships without collision. It pulls at men. It pulls at things. Gravity determines how much of the Earth's atmosphere is held around it, and this determines how high evaporated seawater is pulled, and how far carried, and where deposited as rain or snow. In our tomorrows, gravity will determine how we talk with each other. Here's K.J. Bossert again.
Once we escape the gravitation of the Earth, we still have to cope with the gravitation of other celestial bodies, in particularly the gravitation of the Sun.
How do we get up enough speed to oppose this attracting force of the Sun?
The only way we are able to attain such speeds is to make use of the velocity of the Earth itself around the Sun, which already exists. This is a velocity of some 18 miles per second. This puts severe limitations on the possibility of space travel. We can only hope, with today's technique, to overcome the gravitation of the Sun by traveling or by leaving the Earth in the same direction as the Earth is already traveling around the Sun. So doing, we make use of these 18 miles per second the Earth has already.
There are many plans to have satellite or orbiting and patrolling space vehicles for military missions to protect us and for communications purposes. What are the problems in this from a gravity angle?
If we're going to use satellites, do reconnaissance, to do a sentry job, we should have many of them. And the information may be either sent directly back to the ground or may have to be relayed from one satellite to another. Now, the number of satellites you need to do this job depends mostly on the altitude at which you're going to fly. If you establish a satellite over the equator in its so-called 24-hour orbit, it will always be over the same spot. That one is 22,000 miles high.
So as gravity holds man down, it gives him and his instrument certain predictability when he's up. He cannot ever completely or constantly escape its clutches, but he can make it do useful labor in his behalf. At the turn of this century, such was the healthy respect of gravity of H.G. Wells, the far-out thinker and writer of his day, that he predicted man might fly before 1950, but would never have learned to land safely. By the year 2000, the things we say today about gravity and what it will be doing for and against man may be equally as short-sighted. Between Earth's gravity itself and atmospheric pressure, the height of a tree and the weight of an elephant on Earth are decided. But away from the Earth and outside atmosphere lies a galaxy not yet subdued, but to which other celestial brands of gravity may be the key. Once men said everything which goes up must come down, this may no longer be true because gravity can be made to ensure that that which can go up can also go out into the far reaches of the universe.
This has been Face to the Future, a transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command and featuring Delvina with her parade of interesting guests. Be with us next time as we put our face to the future.